This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Brock and Salk, Greg Bishop in today. Greg, I promise you that first hour is the one that has like all these moving parts. Need to know, Professor, which is better? Blue 42. Things will slow down. We can just have a conversation now for the next 20 minutes or so. This is a little more like when you've come in and joined Salk and I the half dozen or so times, and you get to start to tell some of the backstories, some of the history that we all find. And I always find when different guests come in or we'll take a call, I don't, you know, this is a weird medium. Like, you've gotten hit up on Facebook and text. Like, you never really know who's out there. You're looking at this text toy that people are texting in.
It's amazing, by the way.
I found, like, in, I think, almost 10 years of doing this, that sometimes my best read is actually Lydia and Kyle. Right? That for some reason, they're, like, my sample size of, like, how engaging. Because Salk and I can be so, like, into a conversation or have a guest on and be so, oh man, it was amazing. And I'll kind of peek over there with my peripheral QB vision and they'll just be like on the computer doing something. Or other times.
Don't be misled.
Yeah, okay,
by that,
come on.
Or other times.
Because we've got other work to
or
do.
Or other times you will be so captivated, like which usually happens when Greg comes in, that you're just staring at him. And you're
if I'm really captivated, yes. I take my headphones off yes. and like really focus.
And you can't be doing anything else because you're like, oh, I got to hear more of this. And that's usually the case, Greg, when you've come in here and spun some of your different stories from behind the scenes. We'll hit a whole bunch of NFL ones an hour from now. But you did. You tell me how the setup began with you getting close to the Mariners for the story that will come out in Sports Illustrated next week.
You know, it's interesting because I've been trying to do a Mariners piece for a couple of years now. I feel bad for Tim Heavily because he's the PR guy over there. And every year I kind of hit him up for lunch, and then I take him out, and I talk to him about the story I want to do, where I want to just sort of explain what I think is a pretty unique approach to baseball. And in the previous couple years, we had talked about doing it. I'd even met with Jerry DePoto, and ultimately the record just didn't match up with being able to do like a magazine story on them. So, you know, this year I think they were a little cautious when I called and was like, hey, I think it's time to do something. This yeah. is a national story. This team has the fourth best record in baseball, despite the suspension of its best player. You know, let's just do something. And so I went down a couple Saturdays ago to meet with Jerry in his office. We talked for about an hour. And then I just asked, can I just hang out for a week? And, you know, they set me up with something like 20 interviews. I have a 100-page file of reporting that resulted out of it. I watched the last game of that homestand with Jerry in the box upstairs. You know, he really loved the bread pudding up there, I can tell you that. And, you know, in between, I spoke to all these support people that I think are sort of unusual that they use. I talked to maybe half the clubhouse. I thought the way they handle pitchers was really interesting. I focused some of the story on that. I talked to Felix, you know, just about what this whole thing has been like and maybe pitching in the postseason. And I just think there were so many elements there that as I finished a draft of the piece yesterday at like 11 p.m., I was like, man, I am way over.
Interesting.
Speaking of writing paragraphs, I got to do that a little bit more later this afternoon.
Media man.
Sports media man.
Yeah, so all in all, it was fascinating. I learned a lot.
So I did some very amateur writing for ESPN the magazine a couple different times with college football, and I always enjoyed it. I remember
Don't be so humble, bro. When you write for ESPN the magazine, it's not very
I weird. Remember the editor saying, hey, here's this tent pole topic, right? So we need these tent poles. Is that vernacular that's used still today? Like, hey, what here? Let's make sure that we hit on this, we hit on this, we hit on this. Is that still used, or is that just him trying to make sense to a dumb QB?
You know, see, usually I kind of try to ignore editors. That's kind of part of my MO, you know.
Yes, right.
The more that I can avoid them, the better. There's sort of a contentious relationship
the bad
there.
Bad boy, sports writing.
They may call me a diva. No, I'm kidding. I'm talking to my editor about that story the minute that I leave here because I'm scared of him and I need to get more space. But yeah, I think that when you go into it, we talk about what might be possible, and I think the key to this story is differentiating the Mariners' approach from all the other things that other people are doing. You know, I've written process stories about Kirk Cousins, Tom Brady, TB12, Gonzaga basketball. I don't think that any of this at this point in time in the world of sports is like particularly revolutionary or new. I do think that what the Mariners do in totality, the sheer number of things that they have, people they have, resources that are available to their players, I think that in a holistic you know, sense that they are unique, and that's what I tried to hone in on.
Who did you think that started with? So we chatted a little bit last night when we knew you were going to come in here to fill in for Salky, who's on jury duty, and Greg Bishop in this morning. And you said, oh, yeah, I was just with the Mariners. Like, what a home run timing. Was it Jerry DePoto? Was it some of the process? Was some of the other resources? Is it Felix? Is it Cano? Is it Segura? As you looked at some of these, where did your story start? Did it start with Jerry?
Yeah, I think it started with Jerry because everything else is sort of stems from his approach. And whether it was, you know, bringing in Scott Servais with no managerial experience, because those guys used to share an apartment in Tucson 20 years ago, and they would talk about these very things, you know, baseball philosophy, how to build a team, why teams weren't successful because they were so clinging to old school kind of traditions and slow to embrace change, you know, to like the support staff that he added in terms of mental coaches and people with backgrounds in sports psychology and a communication specialist. And every
you've sat with all of these guys. You sat with Pete Carroll. We talked about that, right? We you have sat with some of the biggest and best and brightest minds in sports, from boxing to baseball to football, all of them. Did Jerry, did he walk away in your interaction with Jerry and go, yeah, he's a trendsetter. He's a guy that's a real forward thinker. He's a guy that's doing some things, and I'm now seeing why this team is having a whole lot more success than maybe some of the traditional baseball numbers would lead you believe that the road they would be down.
Yeah, you know, to me, he did strike me that way, as a guy who was ahead of the curve and who was trying to differentiate the team. I mean, what he said essentially is that if the Mariners operate the same way as, say, the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Dodgers, they're never going to catch them because they're already behind. They don't have the same amount of resources. If they're a Moneyball analytics team, they're never going to catch the best teams that do that, because every team in baseball does that now. And what he's looking for is differentiation. Now, do I think it's at a level beyond like what Tom Brady does? No, I don't think that. I think that what's different here is that it's happening in baseball. You know, here's a sport that's been the slowest of all the sports to embrace change. It's the most tradition-laden. And I think that because of the holistic approach the Mariners take to the way that they prepare, you know, they're able to do maybe more things than other teams do in that regard. And I think that starts with Jerry.
You get a feel for the difference between the way that Jerry's going down this path and his predecessors. You know, from afar, and I was never embedded with this, but from afar, it sure felt like silos. That Howard and Chuck, for better or worse, and they had some good years, and you know, the early 2000s, the late 90s, they deserve a lot of credit for that. But in this dry spell that we have seen, that it was a real silo effect, that you're going to stay in your lane here, and then in you know, we got to know Jack for 5, 6, 7 years, and there was just never that freedom of expression you feel with Jerry. Did he get the sense that a lot of this is anew in that organization?
Yeah, I think that like that's the way baseball's always been, right? That there's this idea that it's been done a certain way, that you coach because you played the game or because you know somebody who coached, and that input from outsiders is always going to be met with skepticism. I mean, when Jerry and Scott were living together in Tucson, they actually had people in that organization say, hey, it's cool that you guys stay up all night drinking wine and making spreadsheets on like who has the best changeup in baseball, but you guys should realize that you're not going to change the world. This is baseball. It doesn't change. It's the same way that it's always been. And I think when I talked to Jerry, it almost reminded me a little bit of Pete Carroll, in that, you know, what the Mariners are doing is celebrating uniqueness, whether that's bringing in a communications expert to teach coaches how to talk to players, whether it's having a high performance director for the first time, or whether it's allowing a guy like Felix, who doesn't like the numbers, who isn't interested in the data, you know, ultimately do what he wants to do too. It's not any one way to reach guys, and I think that's what they're saying, is that with 25 guys, there might be 25 different approaches, but if each one is a little better because of your methodology than they would have been otherwise, that's how you win 8 million run-one games.
Greg Bishop in for Salk this morning. I know why you laughed, why both of you laughed, because can you picture Jerry and Scott 20 years ago drinking wine and talking
change-up? Absolutely. I was actually just trying to think, like, what kind of wine were they drinking? Like, what would go along well with making spreadsheets?
Right.
Are they up drinking, like, rosé? I don't know. Maybe that's seasonal.
A little Merlot, a big heavy cab when they were studying a big
heavy
fastball
right.
pitcher. Who knows what it is? So you mentioned the communications director. I've not heard this name. Leslie Manning. Who is Leslie Manning, and what role does she play within this organization?
See, I'm a nerd about process, so I thought this part was fascinating. So I asked Jerry, who in your organization would surprise me as somebody who's had like a great impact? And he mentions Leslie Manning, who I've never heard of, and who he basically says is one of the best communicators he's ever met. And it's her job essentially 20 nights a month to travel on the road and meet with every coach in the system, including those at the big league level, just to teach them how to better communicate with players. And that struck me as like the simplest thing in the world. And you'd think it would have been done since the beginning of time, but I'd never heard of it before. You know, it, literally she's having meetings to help people have better meetings, which is sort of part of the Mariners way. And yet reaching players in different ways and making sure that you get the most out of them, I mean, that's essentially coaching at its most basic, simplest level. And I wondered, why doesn't every team in every sport in the world have somebody that does exactly that? And then I talked to her, and like the way that they hired her, like her meetings with these coaches are confidential, even like even from Jerry, so that she can get the most out of these coaches and they can get the most out of their players. And it just struck me as, when you're talking about no stone unturned, when you're saying I'm going to try everything because we need to do everything in order to catch the Astros, I mean, to me, that was a really good example of it, and that's why she's really high in the story.
Yeah, Greg Bishop here with us from Sports Illustrated. I think where I've gotten that sense being around the team, Greg, is probably with the pitching staff more than anything else. When I hear you talk Jerry, who was a former pitcher himself and who really prioritizes both the starters and their rotation and just knows the value of it. Scott, the catcher, every time we talk to him, especially in season, it is pitching and pitching, and it's why this team's 19 games above 500 right now. They go about their whole pitching situation and teaching and coaching differently. There's not one singular voice. You know, the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, make a change. Schottenheimer's in because we had too many voices. Tom Cable's voice, Tater's voice, Bevel's voice. Nope, I want one singular voice for these guys. Yet the Mariners in this process, and especially with their pitchers, are using a multitude of voices.
Yeah, that part was fascinating to me in a way where I even devoted like a whole day in the story to it, because the Mariners looked at it last season basically like they have 13 position guys usually and 12 pitchers, and yet there are five coaches for the position players and usually only two for the pitching staff. And so they just blew that whole thing up. They have a pitching coach in Mel Stottlemyre Jr. that obviously comes from baseball royalty. They have a biomechanics guy. They have a numbers interpreting guy. They have a qualitative analyst whose job is to feed them the numbers. You know, he gives them to the advanced scout who travels with the team and sort of whittles it down. And then they go to the guy that interprets the numbers, who gives them to the guy who looks at the biomechanics, who now has numbers to look for what he's seeing. And all that gets funneled into Mel Stottlemyre Jr., who can then talk to the players. I mean, to me, it was a really, really unique approach, because Mel was telling me that his dad, you know, the best pitching coach in the history of Major League Baseball, was like listening to all this and going, I could never coach now. Like, I wouldn't even want to step in to this situation. And yet, for a guy whose whole life has been predicated on the eye test and what you can see and how that should guide your thing, what he's saying is the numbers and the biomechanical information actually inform what his eyes see. They tell him if he's seeing the right thing or the wrong thing, and they tell him what to say to these individual players. And when you look at this team, I mean, look at all the pitching performances they've had this year. Wade LeBlanc's career resurrection, Marco Gonzalez coming back from arm injuries to become a really solid major league starter, James Paxton's continued development into a strong ace. I mean, it really is remarkable. And to me, when you look at their record versus their run differential, you know, to me, the pitching staff is, you know, prime real estate reason one why.
That's awesome. Greg Bishop with us. I think of two things, Greg, as I listen to you there. I think of Charlie Blackmon last night in the All-Star game. And when he was mic'd up in center field, he was great. I don't know if he was anybody else's favorite, but he was probably my favorite. Because he was...
Francisco was my favorite. But Charlie was great.
Lindor was awesome, high energy. But Blackmon was like nervous, like superstitious. You could tell he was trying to give information, but so focused on the game. And ultimately...
You know that kid was excited about it.
Super geeked.
Charlie Blackmon was like looking around like someone was after him.
Yes.
Like he thought there was people chasing
him. It was nuts.
To hurt him.
And some of his input, Greg, much like yours, like he looks into that bullpen to see who's warming up next, because he was third at bat. He knew it. And there's nobody warming up. So he knew he was going to face Morton. So he's already thinking about that at bat a little bit. And he's constantly looking around. And he goes, this is hard for me, guys, because everything in my game right now that makes me a good player is thrown out the window in this All-Star game. I have no scouting reports. I don't know where I'm shifting. All of this data, right? And he's one of these that has seen so much success because of the process involved and who can handle all of this information and has thrived within it. On the other side, I think of Felix. And as you were talking and you know, elaborating about all of these voices, he's been on the record clearly a few years ago. It's like, scouting reports. I don't read scouting reports. Shannon Dreher, just a couple weeks with us when we were talking about Felix and within some of his struggles, you know, and all of this process and all these voices. And, you know, Shannon was pretty clear, you know, maybe as clear as she's ever been, that it's been a learning curve for Felix.
I think Felix has changed a lot since then. I don't think that he really listens to anybody. I think that he has in his head what he is. I think he might be starting to see what the reality of the situation is right now. But I'm just saying, just now starting to see that.
And you can hear my probably right there. And Mel Stottlemyre was with us last week. He talked about some of this pitching, the process, how proud he is of so much of the buy-in of many.
And they've been very efficient. I felt like Scott and I have managed the rotation very well in terms of their high leverage innings, their workload, and trying not to string three outings in a row where we've leaned on them too hard and we found some breathers in there.
So how do you see Felix as you were over there, right? As you were just praising the Leslie Mannings and her communication skills and style with these players and the five different analytical voices they've got within that pitching staff. And Mel, who's probably the oldest of the old guard, even he's like, and he references dad being out like, man, this is amazing stuff. So where does Felix sit in the middle of all of it?
Yeah, to me, it's really interesting to sort of watch Felix's career arc. I'm dating myself here, but I interviewed him in Everett when he was 17, you know, and we're talking about, I was working for Seattle Times and Snohomish County was like one of my zones, you know, where I had to go report in. And like, to see the way that he's pitched for so many years and the dominant narrative was always, here's the best pitcher that never pitched in the postseason. Here's a guy that loses a million one-run games. Here's a guy that's not getting what he deserves. Why would he stay around? Mm-hmm. And now, you know, when I talked to Felix the other day, he said this is the best team he's ever played on, even while acknowledging this has not been the kind of season that he hoped for. And because he doesn't really buy into the number stuff, because he doesn't use the technology they have to measure pitching data, because he considers himself, like me, a magazine writer in a world where nobody reads anymore. He considers
himself... Paragraph writer, come on.
Yeah, writing paragraphs. He considers himself like an old soul. And to me, that's why in the story I frame him as kind of like, what are they going to do in the future? Do they go completely past anybody who doesn't buy in? Is he not going to be a lifetime Mariner? And if that is true, can they get into the playoffs this year? And can he pitch in a postseason game, which, you know, he was saying he might get emotional, that's what he's been dreaming of since he came here. And to me, that's still where the tension is. Like, they've had so much buy-in. They've had so much success, I think, based on this process and what they've implemented. And here's one guy who's, you know, a franchise icon, one of the best players in the history of the team, and he's sort of not really into it as much as the other guys are.
Yeah, and it's hard because those other guys are reaping huge benefits from it, and he's the one right now still struggling. This hour of Brock and Salk brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Let's do this. This is kind of fun when I get to be in the pilot seat. It's nice when it's once a week. I think I can handle once a week at times. Salky's out on jury duty. Greg Bishop is in. And we have some tickets to give away. And Salk just likes to like open up the phone lines, first caller, seventh caller. Being the son of a coach who's going to coach today at our football camp, I like a little work, right? I like a little dedication behind the scenes. And so we're going to give away some tickets next segment, 8:30. But you have to listen to something Greg has said over the last 15 minutes, over the next 10 minutes, as he's sharing so many nuggets with you. You're going to have to really listen in, be able to answer a question to win those tickets at 8:30. Your chance to add to your Mariners bobblehead collection, by the way. The first 20,000 fans will receive a bobblehead featuring blazing fast second baseman D. Gordon. Find great seats at Mariners.com, or you can win those tickets next segment, but you got to keep listening. So there's Felix. There's a star, right? There's all this amazing process, and there's also Robbie Cano, right? Another major one of these temples, another one of these major stars. What was your feeling being around the team for the week you were? Did you get a chance to see Robbie at all? Did you feel his presence at all? Was he talked about at all? Is he, you know, is looming coming off his suspension, what, August 14th? Can't get here fast enough. August 14th to be back a part of this. What was your sense with where Robbie fit in all of it?
Yeah, this one's a little complicated for me. Cano was actually the first cover story I wrote for Sports Illustrated. I was still living in New York at the time, and I went to visit him in the Dominican Republic, and I really liked him. You know, I thought it was interesting, and I framed the story around, can you sort of manufacture a superstar out of a guy who's simply a really great player? And to me, this latest news really fits into that and how we look at him and what his legacy might be moving forward. what struck me when I was around the team was how they didn't really shy away from it. You know, they talked about losing Robbie. They talked about the win streak they went on for 5 weeks after, you know, he was suspended. They discussed, I thought it was most telling what Scott told them, you know, right after the suspension, which was, we're a good team, we're going to win. And to me, that's like basically saying, trust the process, right? Like, we have built this team around these players. We have a second baseman in D. Gordon who's really good. We can slide him right into that spot, and we're just going to have to keep winning in different ways. And, you know, maybe some of that was fortuitous. Maybe this team isn't as good as their record indicates. But to me, what they did without Cano was one of the best stories of the entire baseball season so far.
So it sounds that Scott Servais shared with you a little bit of what he did with Salk and I when we were there on a Wednesday morning, talking about the impact of that Robbie Cano suspension and what it meant for this team.
Let me clarify. That's on the team meeting?
Yes, sir.
You know, I want guys to clean their mind. I don't want everybody, you know, to walk out of here with their shoulders down, drooping, whatever. We've done a lot of good things this first half. We put ourselves in a position, you know, to get into the playoffs. We've got to play good ball down the stretch, and we're looking forward to that.
Well, that was after the last game, unfortunately, losing 7-9 down the stretch. But a similar message that we believe in you guys. And he has been steadfast in that. More than anybody, Greg. Like, if you had been out with us in March and you were around spring training and Jerry and Scott, the two wine drinkers from Tucson 20 years ago, you would have felt Scott's optimism with this team. Jerry was still, I think, putting pieces together. There are other elements going on with Jerry at that time as a team builder and losing Shohei Ohtani and everything else and how he's going to put, you know, pieces together. But Scott, from day one, has really liked this team. Did you get that sense being around him that Scott's pretty confident in what they're capable of doing in the second half?
Yeah, for sure. For anyone that considers the Mariners start so far fortuitous, I would say that the sense around the team is they don't look at it like that at all, which, you know, isn't that surprising that they would see their success as a product of the work that they put in. But, you know, you have a team now that can win in a lot of different ways. You know, when they get enough runs, they have a good starting staff. Their bullpen has, for the most part, played really well. And I think that, you know, they were saying that they could tell as far back as in spring training that this was a team that might be playoff ready. Jerry, in particular, cited the opening game. It was a one-run win. It was the kind of game he said that they normally would lose. You know, they scratched out two runs. I think it was Cruz that homered in that game.
Yep.
You know, they got a strong start from Felix. They had five relievers come in. Diaz picked up the save, his first of the year. And I think that, you know, ultimately, like, that was a harbinger for what we've seen all season. A team that continues to win that way, that looks like a 1980 National League a contender and plays the game in a style that's just kind of totally different, you know, than what we're seeing across baseball right
so
now.
So we'll see your story come out on the Mariners next week in
next
Sports
week.
Illustrated. Yeah. One of the stories that did come out here in kind of recency and even yesterday or this week, Jerry DePoto talking about Robbie Cano and where he's going to fit and where he's fit on this team through this 80-game suspension.
Much of the time when the club is at home, Robinson does come in to get his PT in, and he'll spend some time in the cages just talking and spending time with his teammates while Ichiro's in there. So it's a collective of, I don't know, something in the neighborhood of 7,000 career hits running around in our batting cage at a given moment on a home game. But he's doing well, and he's staying connected to the team. They haven't forgotten that Robinson's part of it.
Cano still smell good, Jerry?
I don't know why that was on the end of the cut. Someone left us a little Easter egg.
Was there silence, or did he answer that question?
I don't know. That's the end of the cut.
That's really good.
Just ends with that.
I don't know where to go with that.
Yeah, well, does he smell good? Probably. He's one smooth guy. He's also been a second baseman his entire career. Jerry DePoto telling Joel Sherman yesterday, that's not going to be the case when he comes back here August 14th. You think that'll be a little bit of a challenge within that group? Within all this fun-loving momentum, communicating, everything going the right way, that if Robbie Cano wants to play second base and D. Gordon is going to be their second baseman, do you think there could be a little friction point within all this fun?
Yeah, I think that it's worth looking at for sure. I mean, the Mariners have maybe the best collection of second base talent in the history of baseball when you look at Segura, D. Gordon, and Robinson Cano. I mean, that's a lot of guys that can really play one position. I mean, one thing that we've talked about already on the show is that the Mariners have sort of a spirit about them and a chemistry that seems to have, you know, contributed to how many close games they've won. And you wonder when they bring a guy back, knowing that he's not eligible to play in the postseason, knowing that they're going to have to change this up again, you know, will there be resentment from the guys who aren't getting reps then that are going to have to step in should they make the playoffs? Will there be resentment from people that feel like, you know, that he did something he shouldn't have done and shouldn't be rewarded for it. It could mess with the chemistry. And yet I think the other thing that we've seen with the Mariners is that they've won games in a million different ways. Yep. And if they win games with Robinson Cano at first base, that just fits in with the pattern.
That's exactly right. Whatever this process is going to be, it's all hands on deck. We're all going to play a role. And I think we did decide, did we not, that the spirit of this Mariners team was really – the genie came out of the bottle last night in D.C. No way a team with a -2 run differential should be sitting 19 games above 500. No way a team that lost its best player for 80 games should be sitting 19 games over 500. No way when Kyle Seager and Felix are having challenging years should this team be sitting 19 games over 500. But they are. They've done all of that. I hope you listened to some of Greg over the last 25 minutes, because if you did, your chance to win a couple Mariner tickets to that D. Gordon bobblehead night coming up real soon this weekend. We'll open up those phone lines here. We'll also dig into last night's game was a perfect microcosm of the beauty and the challenge of where baseball is today. We'll tackle that conversation. Greg Bishop in was for Salk. It's Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle.
He did it!
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Brock and Salk, Greg Bishop in for Salk today. I love your email to me last night. You're like, hey, I'm going to watch this All-Star game. It'll be a little later. I'm going into my space. I've got how many words? 100 pages of reporting on the Mariners. And
50,000 words.
50,000 words. I got to condense down into 3,500.
Yeah, that'll be later this afternoon. I will be writing paragraphs as it goes.
So I'm going to be in my own place putting paragraphs together. So I'm going to check in way later. We can check in the morning. We can do this three-hour extravaganza. But one thing, Greg, as you were taking and writing all those paragraphs and condensing, that just struck me. Just sitting there watching that game. And this was not with any, like, bias of negativity at all, but just watching it, like, home run, strikeout, 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 home run, walk, strikeout. Strikeout, home run, strikeout. And you just go through all of the history that was made last night of all of the home runs, the most home runs ever, 10 in an All-Star game. It was the most strikeouts, 25 in that All-Star game. And I went back and I tried to look at some of these different All-Star games from different eras. I've always remembered great pitching, right? Randy Johnson out there with John Crook, who was like, no thanks. Right, put his helmet on backwards, like, I'm not even going to mess around with this. I don't even want any part of this. Great pitching has always dominated, you know, hitting in many ways. But the 95 All-Star game, 4 home runs, 16 strikeouts. The 85 All-Star game, 0 home runs. And that was in the Metrodome, 0, 14 strikeouts. The 75 All-Star game that I know you covered for Sports Illustrated, 3 home runs, 11 strikeouts. Last night was just very emblematic of where the game is today. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but I know people in baseball are a bit worried about the lack of movement, the stationary nature of it, and just the three outcome nature that has become so much of the game of baseball today.
Yeah, what's interesting to me there is just how hard it is for baseball to hit on a formula that feels right. You know, we had this home run era and this steroid era, and then we segue into nobody's hitting home runs anymore. And the lament is, where did the power game go? And this reminds me too much of the 1980s. And, you know, why can't we have 6 guys hitting 60 home runs a year? And then now we're back to the other way, right? That it's about a game that has too much standing around, that takes too long to unfold. And when you look at the society we live in, the microwave nature of it, the number of options even just in town here for things that you can do. And I think baseball, while interesting right now, is still at a crisis point. You know, you see the numbers. The NBA is having a moment right now. It hasn't been this interesting in a long time.
Yep.
The NFL is always going to be a behemoth, even though we've seen some cracks there. And I just think that baseball is a harder sell to younger people because of all the things that you just talked about.
And you know what else is tough is you watch those guys last night mic'd up. We loved it a few years ago, George Springer, Bryce Harper. I'm glad they went even further all in. And I know that's a directive from Rob Manfred. He said as much. You know, he even said yesterday, yeah, Mike Trout's Q rating was asked about it. He's like, yeah, that takes Mike Trout wanting to do a little bit more. And he's trying to get his guys out. My little guy, Titus, loves baseball. He literally sat there yesterday for like 4 hours watching the MLB Network. And because they were there in the stadium interviewing all these players. I mean, he is just so all in to so many of these little storylines. And good for baseball to try to bring this out of guys, to try to bring it. And the bummer for me is watching Mike Trout, who's like a caged lion. I think even Joe Buck was like, dude, do you ever sit still? And he's like, no. Francisco Lindor, like, just so hyper, like, let's go. Like, and these are tremendous athletes that can do amazing things. Yet for the majority of the game, they're just standing. And they're standing and watching either a Chris Sale, 101-mile-an-hour strikeout, Max Scherzer last night. Yeah, good luck, Jose Altuve, with Max Scherzer and what he was bringing.
Field two. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. 98 again. Back-to-back strikeouts for Max.
I mean, it's 98. It's 99. Chris Sale's 100. He's 101. You know, Smoltz is in there like he's running out of stuff to say. This guy's dealing. I mean, this guy's just knockout. This guy, yeah, they're all. I mean, they all throw like 95 to 100. Severino's 99, 100 miles an hour. You're like, what are we doing here? You know, I mean, it's just these great athletes. I almost felt bad for some of the unbelievable athleticism that was never on display. There was not one good defensive play in that game last night.
10 pitchers had their max fastball of 98 or above last night.
Yes.
10.
10. Not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six. Not Randy Johnson, the anomaly way back when Drucker. No, 10 of them, 98 plus. Am I wrong? Was there one defensive play in that game last night? Was there one?
Just the play Votto didn't make.
Yeah, where he's running, and well, because of it, Gene Segura at that time had the biggest play of the All-Star game, and boy, wasn't that
Here's
fun.
A 3-2. Swing and a ball hammer. Left field, way back there, on its way, out of here. Gene Segura, it's a three-run homer, and the American League has jumped on top. It is 5-2. He got all of it into the bullpen in left field.
There's your MVP right there, partner.
Oh, David, he sure was. He was going to be our MVP, and then unfortunately our guy that throws 98-99 wasn't throwing it necessarily where he wanted to and gave up the save. Eddie Diaz did get the win last night. And, Greg, I hate to be this guy, Greg Bishop in for Salk. I hate to be the guy that sits here and like, oh, this is wrong. I got to fix this. Oh, this is broken. I mean, I celebrate these phenoms and freaks that throw 98-plus. But you know it. When you're around people in baseball, as you were with the Mariners for a week, they're not sitting on their hands. They know their game right now has got to bring a little bit more appeal.
Yeah, I think it comes back to, like, how often do you want to see the same thing over and over? And not only do we see this over and over in every game where it's a guy throwing 100 miles an hour and guys trying to hit home runs and either doing that or striking out, but they play 162 games in a season, and then they play in the playoffs for a long time. And how many times can you watch the same movie, as good as it would be, you know, if it's just fast pitch, big swing, whiff or home run, you lose some of the artistry that I think makes baseball
special. So can you have a team that has seven speed bunt guys? If there was a baseball team out there right now with seven D Gordons in a Nelly and a Segura, right? You had seven D guys that had nothing but pure speed. They weren't just on base. They weren't power guys. They truly played like some of those mid-80s NL teams. I think of Ozzy and Willie and the St. Louis Cardinals, especially on that turf. And you said, nope. I'm going to be a major league team and forget this. We're going turf. I mean, we're going to go some of the fastest turf in all of baseball, and I'm going to get seven of the fastest speed demons, and we're going to zag when everybody else is going to zig, and you can have Aaron Judge and Stanton and all these three outcome guys, and we're going to have nothing but contact and base stealers and pure speed. Can the game of baseball today do that? Can there be that much imagination with one that just says enough is enough? Like Earl Weaver did way back when with his Orioles, said, nope, we're going to do it differently than everybody else.
You know, that's a great question, because essentially what you're asking is, would those National League Cardinals teams win in today's era? And I think the differentiator there is going to be pitching. Like, do you have enough pitching where you can get by on, you know, not needing six or seven runs a night to win?
Yep.
If your team's built that way, I think it would be really fun to watch.
Fascinating, wouldn't it?
I would watch a team with seven D Gordons way more than I watch the current Mariners even. And I think that it would be an interesting experiment, because what we saw with Moneyball and what we may be seeing now with the Mariners in terms of how they treat their players is that when you do go a different way in baseball, you tend to be more successful, at least initially. Maybe it's not as sustaining or long-lasting than some of the teams that are trying to compete with the Yankees in terms of power.
Let's do this, Greg. I promise tickets. D. Gordon bobblehead night. Speaking of D. Gordon and all that speed, let's open up these phone lines, Big Kyle. 206-421-3776. 866-979-3776. The story that captivated me and Lydia, even Boy Howdy popped up from his computer. Kyle, we all chuckled at. a little bit of a challenge here. You had to be listening to Greg. You mentioned it a couple times, though, last segment. 20 years ago, sipping wine, service in DePoto in their apartment, crunching numbers, studying change-ups, drinking wine, in what city? In what city did those two that have come to the forefront in baseball now, Jerry DePoto, GM of the Mariners, Scott Service, manager, 20 years ago, they were sipping wine, scratching through the minors, trying to be different than everybody else. What city were they sipping wine? And you know that answer. You call in to Big Kyle right now. Your chance to win a couple tickets to D. Gordon Bobblehead Night. More tickets available at Mariners.com. Good news, bad news, no news. Greg Bishop in for Salk. It's Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Good news. Yeah! Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
Brock and Greg Bishop today sitting in for jury duty, Salk. This 8 a.m. hour brought to you every day by my friends at Precore Home Fitness. It's pretty easy, Greg. The three talented people in the back room are going to read a news story. You got to decide good news, bad news, or no news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Jerry DePoto says when Robinson Cano returns from suspension, he will not be the everyday second baseman.
Good news. D. Gordon is a better second baseman than Robbie Cano right now. You need clarity when you're dealing with a superstar Hall of Fame caliber player like Robbie Cano. You do not leave him hanging. You better have a very clear plan and process. They do, and I think that's good news.
Yeah, I was going to say it's good news that Jerry is addressing it, you know, rather than wait until later when Cano comes back and everyone's fielding questions about will he be the second baseman, should he replace D. Gordon. I mean, what we've seen is that D. Gordon can really play that position and play it well. Saw a lot of great defensive plays from him in the week that I was around the team. I think that Jerry talking about it and getting in front of it makes a lot of sense.
You think his friend there, Leslie Manning, helped him with some of the communication style?
I would not bet against that.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Edwin Diaz's blown save in the All-Star game likely cost Gene Segura the MVP award. Would be the second consecutive MVP award for the Mariners in the All-Star game.
Yeah, I think that's bad news. One, because Segura deserved it. Even after what happened, I thought you could make a convincing case that he deserved to win MVP last night. I also thought it was pretty interesting, maybe even a little ironic, that then Diaz ends up picking up the win for having blown the save.
In fact, Mr. Segura's three RBIs were the most by any Mariner in the history of the Mariners in All-Star games, surpassing Griffey and Ichiro and others. Yeah, this is horrible news. This is going to be the wedge that divides this team forever. There was the new car for Gene Segura. There was the celebration, and then Eddie's got to go blow it. He's got to blow the save. He's got to blow the car. He's got to blow the award. This is the kind of stuff that tears teams apart. All of that is tongue-in-cheek. This is a bummer, but largely will be no news. They'll joke around about it. I bet over the course of the next month or two, Gene will give him a hard time, or Nelly will, or Robbie will. But this is absolutely, in the grand scheme of things, no news.
Do you think that Seggy would have automatically gone Camaro, or do you think there was some debate over whether he would have got the pickup truck?
That's a great question. Gene Segura, truck guy, Camaro guy?
Camaro, I think.
Camaro guy.
Yeah. I also think that Diaz, when he signs his next contract, which should be sizable based on his play this season, you got to think about the car at that point. It's only fair.
That's probably true.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Mike Trout has a Q score of 22, meaning about 1 in 5 Americans know exactly who he is.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last time, and that's bad news. I can't shape it any other way. I don't look at that and say, oh, that's awesome. It's wholesome. He's just being who he is. You've got to continue to push and promote your stars. That's the game today. That's what the NFL does. It's what the NBA has taken a page out of and actually written more pages. It's really probably the very substance behind everything they do, is to highlight their stars. So to me, that's bad news.
Yeah, I think it's bad news, and for everybody, right? Like, it's bad news for the Angels that Mike Trout isn't more famous. It's bad news for Mike Trout and his endorsement income. And it's even worse news for the 4 out of 5 Americans who don't know who Mike Trout is. I mean, this guy's an amazing baseball player. If you don't know who he is, that means you've never seen him play, or it hasn't registered with you that he's historically good. I mean, turn on the TV.
Yeah, it was pretty cool last night. Bryce Harper was mic'd up, and they were asking him about Trout. He's like, yeah, he's the best player in the game. I mean, obviously. And you saw what he did to Jacob deGrom. Nobody has hit Jacob deGrom. And, of course, he takes him yard last night in the All-Star game. Yeah, I think that – and Rob Manfred didn't dismiss it. In fact, Rob Manfred turned it right back around last night when asked. Said, yeah, you know, Mike Trout's got something to do with that. He's got to be willing to do a little bit more, be willing to express himself a little bit more for the betterment both of him individually and certainly the collective.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Sierra released her new single, Level Up.
Level up, level up.
Brock?
Greg?
This is good news. News.
Oh, it's good news.
And it's because I now have a new writing song. Plus, I can envision in my head, like, her and Russell having a sort of a confab about this before the song was written. Level up, you know, did he weigh in on the wording? Was he actually in the video?
Yummy in the Tummy is definitely a Russell original.
There's a lot to like there.
Well, this is usually when we bring in our expert, Greg. Howdy's had a couple records up in Canada. Some of his albums for Thomas Rawls have gone platinum in this market as far as downloads go. Howdy, I kind of turn the stage over to you. I'm going to say it's good news on as we get on the precipice of training camp to take a step up. I'm reminded of a caller from a couple weeks ago, got in our top five because he talked about Russell always being a trader upper, like always achieving and climbing and want to move up the ladder. Is that lyrically what you've kind of felt and seen in this new song, in this single that Sierra released last night, Level Up?
Brock, I'm very upset because I believe that Sierra has copyright infringed on some earlier work that I did. I kept the song to myself. I didn't tell anyone about it. I had just shared it with friends and family. And then all of a sudden, I wake up today and I see this song, Level Up, when it actually is something that I wrote years ago.
Level up, 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 level up. All this on me, oh so yummy, all this oh so yummy. You know you want this yummy, yummy, all in your tummy. Level up, level up, level up, level up. All this on me, oh so yummy. All this, oh so yummy. You know you want this yummy, yummy. Level up, yummy in your tummy.
Acoustic version for the win.
So, needless to say, right. It seems like pure copyright infringement.
Can I hear hers
she
again?
She didn't even change the lyrics.
Like, geez,
she just
Sierra.
Took straight lyrics.
Can I hear hers again, please?
Level up, 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 level up. All this on me so yummy, all this sounds so yummy. No, you want this yummy, yummy all in your tummy. Level up, level up, level up, level up, level up.
A yeah. Straight thievery.
Yeah, that.
You have to come out to that today, the camp.
We may be.
Level up, level up.
This version.
Level
this
up,
version.
Level up, level yes. Up, level up, level up, level up. All this on me. Oh, so yummy.
Sounds like
all
a children's song so, about so eating your dinner yummy. Or something.
Greg Bishop's in for the 9 o'clock hour. We'll spin around the NFL next. Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.